Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. New Mexico was recently in the national spotlight for a new law that bans what's known as lunch shaming across the state. That's when schools single out students who have debt in the cafeteria. It might mean a child is served a cold sandwich instead of a hot meal. In some school districts across the country, students have been forced to clean up to pay for their meal, or kids were even stamped with a message on their arm to their parents about the debt. Did you experience lunch shaming growing up? Or do you know a child who's been impacted by the practice? What do you think about this new law? Join our conversation by calling 877-899-5866. We're going to start by talking about lunch shaming this hour, but we're going to take this conversation even broader today. We all know New Mexico is a poor state, one of the poorest in the nation. There are hungry kids in our communities. What can or should be done to address those needs? Again, our number is 877-899-5866. You can also email your comments to callinshow@kunm.org. I'm joined in the studio this morning by Jenny Ramo, Executive Director of New Mexico Appleseed. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Travis McKenzie, co-coordinator of the Growing Health and Justice Coalition, and he also works with the New Mexico Acequia Association. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
Jenny, let's start with you and lunch shaming. You've worked on this issue for a long time. You helped write the legislation that Senator Padilla introduced this year, outlining the practice. Why does it matter if kids are called out for debt in the cafeteria?
You know, for many of these children, it is a triumph even to show up to school. Their lives are chaotic. They are showing up with very little food in their stomach. Sometimes they have had, you know, traumatic experiences at home, in their community, and school really should be a safe place for children. And I think children show up reasonably expecting the grown-ups to take care of them. And the very idea of having a child stand in line waiting to get food, which is what grown-ups give children, and having them be rejected for it or humiliated is just unthinkable and really unnecessary.
One of the things in Albuquerque that's we've talked about for several years is the cold cheese sandwich, which kids whose families owe debt in the cafeteria are given a cold cheese sandwich. Why is that not okay? It's food.
Well, it's different, first of all, and I think that's inherently shaming as to be you're the cheese sandwich kid. It's also not nutritional and not. I mean, the food is already made for the most part at APS and in many of the schools. There's plenty of it. There's a huge amount of food waste and from our experience, the point of the cheese sandwich is actually not to save money. It's not really an accommodation. It's really to embarrass the child into getting their parents to pay. Like, it is using the child as a method of debt collection. And this legislation was meant to separate the child from the debt that they have no power to pay.
Travis, your work in gardening in schools takes you into several schools in APS. Do kids tell you they're hungry?
Oh, definitely. And thank you for having us here. I think this is a extremely important issue to be talking about. But the reality is hunger is very present in a lot of our communities, particularly lower income neighborhoods of color. You know, it could be that the only meal that a child receives is the school lunch system or school meal system. So some of our kids go home and there's little to no food at home. You know, we have single moms taking care of their families, maybe skipping meals to feed their children. And then we have a huge problem with access to healthy, nutritious food in general in our communities. And many families don't have transportation. We don't really have an adequate public transportation to get them to a grocery store. You think about going on the bus with your kids, with your groceries. Like, that's a whole experience in itself. A lot of our grocery stores in the International District have been closing down, you know, which leaves these big giant corporations like Walmart as some of the only access to food that we have, you know, things like that. And it's just really sad. I feel like we're in 2017. If we could put something on Mars and send video feedback from it, you think we could be able to provide healthy, nutritious food to all our children. But our priorities seem to be a little mixed up. And hopefully moving into the future, we'll prioritize and value healthy food for our kids a little bit more.
You mentioned Walmart. I don't want to get too far into it, but, you know, Walmart has been trying to get more organic, more produce and things in their stores. Is that having an impact on with the people you work with?
I mean, you know, I'm just going to be real. A lot of our families that I work with, that's the only store that they're able to go to. And when we don't have a livable wage, when minimum wage is the way it is, families are struggling to buy healthy food. And it's sad in the time that we're in. Junk food, processed food, and unhealthy food is a lot cheaper than some of our healthier options. And so it comes down to a paycheck, you know, trying to spread out your dollars as far as you can. But beyond that, I feel like we really have to talk about colonization and that's effect on our interaction with food, our relationship with food and the earth, and how that's drastically changed, you know, our interaction with food. And nowadays, it's just all about money. Like our only interaction with food is purchasing it as a consumer, whereas, you know, in New Mexico and across the world, we have a rich agricultural history where we've always been involved in growing our food and having our food supply come from the hard work of the community and, you know, from the place that you live.
We are going to get to more of that this hour. Jenny, are things going to change immediately in schools with this new legislation that's passed it? Are things going to be different next week?
No, I think the law, it becomes enrolled maybe early May. And so I don't think anything will change until the next school year.
And do you think that what do you think about New Mexico getting this national attention for this? We usually are not getting singled out for something positive.
To brag a little bit about New Mexico, obviously, this is actually our third First in the Nation initiative having to do with hunger and even economic development and some of the stuff we're talking about. The first was Breakfast After the Bell that requires all high-poverty elementary schools to serve breakfast in the first few minutes of class. It's an incredibly important law. It feeds about 116,000 kids every morning, again, who are really counting on these meals. We also did an initiative for the Navajo Nation with USDA where we got them a demonstration grant for $2.4 million to use USDA school meals as a vehicle for economic development. So right now the meals from USDA may be like a rewarmed beef crumble from Wisconsin, but we have the mutton guy, the blue corn guy, you know, that the squash guy who can all really fulfill the meal requirements. And then we had this school meal shaming bill that really hit a nerve nationally and internationally. I mean, I've been on BBC. It's been quite I'm doing Al Jazeera next week. People really could not believe that we would do this to our children. This is not a restaurant. These are children who need to be fed. And I think what happened may have been kind of innocent enough in its origins, but the result was that children are being humiliated and starved, and it really is avoidable. But the national press has been well timed. In July 1st, there is a requirement by the USDA that every school district have a policy on school meal debt. Now it can be as draconian as you want. You can say we're not giving anyone any ability to charge. But now there is a national spotlight on these policies, and so they can't just quietly issue a policy saying too bad. They're going to have to say loud and clear that they're going to be the school district that doesn't feed their children.
You know, schools are really getting squeezed right now with the state budget. I would imagine having debt in the cafeteria is an issue for schools. So is the solution to get those kids on free and reduced lunches or to get the parents to somehow pay for that?
There are different kind of chunks of children in this debt pool. So there are the children who are eligible for free meals and reduced price meals and just haven't been enrolled. And there are all sorts of reasons people don't enroll. Undocumented families are afraid to enroll. People are embarrassed to enroll. Their lives are too chaotic. And even if you wait 3 weeks to enroll your child, and the school then has 10 days to process your application, you still can be racking up quite a bit of debt in that time. So our hope is, at least for those children, you know, say 50% of the school meal debt is children who should be eating for free or reduced price meals. So those children are going to hopefully not be racking up debt and bringing in positive revenue. So that should offset some of the increase in debt. The other thing is I don't think, and time will tell, but I think most of these families want to pay the bill. But families are really paycheck to paycheck. And so when it's deciding your kid isn't going to eat tomorrow, or you have to pay your gas bill, or you have to pay your car payment, it's really not fair, you know, to have to do this. So this is going to give children a little bit more time. And I'm sure there are going to be the families who just say, we're not paying. But ultimately, the school district can engage in a debt collection process.
All right. That's really good information. Jenny Ramo from New Mexico Appleseed. Did you go hungry as a child? How does that influence how you see the world today? Or are you struggling right now to feed your kids and grandkids? Where have you gone to try to get some help? Are you finding that it's easy or it's difficult to get assistance to make sure there's healthy food on the table? The number to join us today, 877-899-5866. Again, that's 877-899-5866. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're going to go now to Neil in Albuquerque. Neil, what would you like to add to the conversation? Neil, are you there? All right, we'll try to get Neil back. We have some other guests with us in studio today. Josh Norman is Outreach Coordinator for Mogro Mobile Grocery. Josh, thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be here.
Also, Alexandria Lyons is an intern with Project Feed the Hood in Albuquerque's International District. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Josh, we kind of mentioned a moment ago that there's some transportation issues. New Mexico's a big state.
Sure.
People need to
yep.
drive. There's not always a grocery store nearby. How is Mogro addressing those geographic issues in accessing healthy food?
So Mogro works both in urban areas and rural areas, and one of the issues we're trying to address is food deserts in New Mexico, which is most of New Mexico actually lies in a food desert. And so what we do is we actually take food out to rural communities that lack access to even simple, even small-scale grocery stores. Sometimes our families are doing most of their shopping at C-stores, at corner stores or convenience stores, where there really is a paucity of access to anything like fruits and vegetables or anything that we would consider healthy.
And how long have you guys been around?
We've been around 5 years, and we've actually had a few different iterations. One, we started out having a truck that went out to our communities, and it was actually a mobile grocery store that opened its doors. People could walk in and shop, and that was our communities really appreciated that. It made them feel like they were basically had the same access as an urban person would to choices in shopping. That was something that we have transitioned away from only because the enormous cost of running this truck and keeping the maintenance up on this truck that's going out and sometimes on rural roads and dirt roads and, you know, has a lot of maintenance problems. We have since shifted to more of a CSA model grocery distribution. So right now what our customers do is they can order online or they can call in their orders, and they go pick it up at a location where they have a person there doing a distribution for them. They can go in. We take different methods of payment, including Snap, and they can also customize their selection. So it's still, we're trying to kind of find a balance between cost efficiency to keep us going and allow people to feel like, you know, I have some choice over this, and I can get healthy food for my kids.
Now, why does choice matter, though? I mean, folks who are hungry, some people might say they should just take what they can get.
I think a lot of people do say that, and I think that's very unfortunate. I think dignity is the first reason that choice matters. Hunger is certainly a huge issue, especially in our state, but dignity around food is something that I think we need to be paying more attention to. Imagine going to the grocery store and having no options, you know, being told you need to have this food or that food because that's all that, you know, your family is worth. So dignity is a big part. And then, you know, just in terms of wanting to come back, if our customers and our families don't have choice, they're not going to want to come back. And, you know, they may just decide to go to the C-store and get what's there, because at least there they can look at a couple options and say, well, I want A instead of B, and feel like, you know, they're a real person. They get to choose things.
Travis, I would think dignity is something that you relate to as well, of wanting to make sure people have some choice and dignity.
Definitely. And I feel like this is a great conversation because we want to talk about healthy, quality food for all people. And this kind of highlights that access to healthy, nutritious food should be a human right and not something that people are whittled down to and undignified, you know, in that process. We also just wanted to mention, too, standing in solidarity with our cafeteria workers, with food service providers, that we're all in this together, you know, and we don't want anybody to feel alienated or demonized, that we're all in this united, and we can all rally behind getting healthier, more nutritious food to our school lunch programs, meals to our kids. I mean, if anybody deserves the best quality, most nutritious food, I feel like it's our children. And I'd love to have people feel empowered to speak out on that, you know, and be encouraged to contact their school board member or their elected officials to say, this matters to us as a family. We want healthier food for our kids.
Jenny, did you want to jump in on that too?
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot with the lunch shaming and the idea that being poor is incredibly difficult and how many policies have to do with shame. And we've been thinking ahead to the Farm Bill and SNAP and the idea that there are these work requirements that are completely fool's errands, you know, that you're required to apply to 24 places in a, you know, 36-month period or whatever it is in communities that simply don't even have that many employers. That you are shamed by not giving getting choices of food. You're shamed by the more you earn, these cliff effects where you then lose benefits. The more you earn, you finally get a job, and then your children lose free access to free meals, or you lose childcare. And the idea that we are consistently making policies that shame people. Is a very important thing to think about.
Yeah. We need to go to break real quick. We'll be right back. But we want you to join the conversation. Are you a teacher, a former teacher, administrator, or other school staff? Have you seen kids go hungry? Have you ever given snacks or food to kids you know are coming to school hungry? Have you tried to get families resources? And what was that like? What can you share with us today, either during the school day or after, when you see kids that need healthy food? 877-899-5866. The number to call again, 877-899-5866. We'll be right back.
Support comes from UNM Bookstore. Find course materials, exclusive Lobo apparel and spirit merchandise, office supplies, and convenience items. Located on campus at Central and Cornell. Info at bookstore.unm.edu.
Support comes from Theater Grotesco, presenting Pi, a new play about the bumbling human condition and the creation of the universe, April 13th through the 30th in Santa Fe. Information at 505-474-8400.
10 powerful brass players, 10 Norwegian women, led by the renowned trumpeter Tina Ting Helseth. The group is called 10 Ting. They're on the way with music and conversation from the PT Studios. I'm Fred Child. Join us for the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have an email comment from Byron. He says he taught in APS schools, and sometimes kids were teased for bringing healthy lunches from home. He says they often eventually started eating at the snack bar that served less healthy things. Another email comment from Roxanne. It's essential to provide food regardless of the ability to pay in order to raise educational standards in New Mexico. She says she's a veteran teacher in Santa Fe and provided snacks, lunch, and breakfast for students who didn't have food at home or were denied food at home. She says hungry children can't learn and are disruptive. They often leave school for the weekend with little or no food to eat for the entire weekend. Those are great comments. Do you want to add something to our conversation today about hunger in New Mexico and access to healthy foods for children and families? The number to call, 877-899-5866, or email callinshow@kunm.org. Josh Norman from MoGro, did you have something you wanted to add when we were talking about dignity and shaming?
Yes, and it speaks to the teacher who wrote in saying that she is sometimes bringing in food for her students. And I just want to thank Travis for mentioning that we are in solidarity with the cafeteria workers and the folks who really have to deal with this on the ground. It's not an easy job. And, you know, I've heard of many instances not where the cafeteria workers are denying food to kids, but quite the opposite. They'll do things like bring in money and put in money in the cash register for these kids, or they'll sneak food, you know, around the corner to the kids. And I think like that is the opposite of shaming. It's dignifying both for the worker and for the students. And my heart goes out to those folks.
Yeah. Let's go now to Myra. Myra, what do you want to add about fresh foods?
So I'm a health apprentice here at a clinic in the South Valley by the name of Casa de Salud. And right now we're collaborating with La Cosecha, or as it's abbreviated, CSA. And what this program is that it provides members of the program with fresh produce from local farms every week from June up until October. And whoever decides to enlist in this program, they don't necessarily have to be a patient of the Casa de Salud. As long as they're enlisted in the program, they have the options of receiving one bag of fresh food, $6 per week, or the other option would be receiving half a bag for $3 per week. So there's subsidized and unsubsidized prices available for these people. And in order to qualify for La Cosecha, the individuals would have to be living in the South Valley, be of low income, or be supporting any children. So anyone from the South Valley is more than welcome to enlist in this program in order to receive fresh vegetables and fruits every week.
Myra, what's the feedback you've gotten from folks who are taking advantage of that?
So the feedback, I believe the Casa de Salud's their first year with this program was last year. And so we had a really big turnout rate, as in we did have individuals coming every week and receiving their fresh produce every single week, and they were very grateful because other than that, they're really limited in their choices of getting fresh fruits and vegetables. And not only that, a lot of the times they don't know how to cook with these fresh fruits and vegetables. So recipes, and I believe they're even going to start giving classes on how to cook with these foods in order to try to implement them in their daily lives.
Myra, thanks so much for calling in today. We'll put a link to La Cosecha on our website at KUNM.org. Let's go now to Seth in Albuquerque. Seth, what's your reaction to this topic today?
Hi. So I'm a parent moving from Colorado, and my kids in Colorado schools, it seems really, really common to have scratch lunch. And one of the things that I've been disappointed by, a little surprised by, in all the schools that we've been exploring in Albuquerque is that a lot of them are kind of pre-prepared, processed food instead of that scratch option. And it seems like this is the right crowd to kind of have some input on why that's different here and what are the obstacles that are not allowing that to happen here as much.
All right.
Thanks,
Seth. I'm going to put that to Jenny Ramo. Jenny Ramo, first tell folks what a scratch lunch is.
Scratch is just cooked from scratch. So we have a lot of barriers to that, I think. And I will tell you, one of you may be able to do a better job than I can on this, but We probably don't have, I'm not sure if Denver or Colorado, I know Denver does do scratch meals. They may also contribute to the budget of the school district. So we only exist on federal meal reimbursements. There's no additional money for it. The only thing they do is sell a la carte food, which is the pizza and all that. And that may help the bottom line. It probably helps a lot. But it's not enough to do too much of a better job. The other issue is we don't have that many kitchens in schools, just the way the planning has gone. APS has a central kitchen, and I think they do the best they can with the meal. But yes, that is a very consistent drumbeat that we hear is the food is really unhealthy.
And when the money is just coming from the federal government, how much money are we talking about per student to prepare a meal?
Well, it's about $3 a meal. And, you know, it adds up. Milk and fresh fruits and vegetables and, you know, or whatever it is that they're serving. It goes quickly.
Travis, did you want to add something about made from scratch meals for kids?
Yeah, just that it's changed a lot. I went to A. Montoya Elementary in the East Mountains, and I remember walking into school and you could smell when it was enchilada day or when they were making tacos or spaghetti. I'd always hear laughter coming from the kitchen, you know, and it's changed a lot. You know, now it's more heating stuff up or, you know, less cooking from scratch and just kind of doing the best with what they're given. And I feel like that is a huge direction we can try to go in as a state, is to allow our cafeteria workers to cook really good tasting healthy food for our kids and give them those resources. You know, I'd love to see the state. I know we're in this budget and it's kind of on people's mind, the crisis in New Mexico with our budget, but what better investment than our children? You know, I'd love to see our legislatures, our, you know, elected officials put some money to to supplement. We've been talking about like a 1% procurement campaign, trying to get school districts to dedicate 1% of their annual food budget to locally grown organic vegetables and fruits. I went to Olympia. There's districts over there that are buying 80% of their fruits and vegetables locally. And so I feel like 1% could be a good start for New Mexico. And a lot of us at SWAP and Farm to Table have been trying to talk about this 1% procurement campaign that we could possibly initiate. But, like, again, I mean, what better investment than our children, right? And it also supports our local economy. You know, if we could buy food from local farmers, it would support our local economy and benefit everyone. So,
yeah, I was just thinking that it would make a huge difference for local farmers in knowing they had a dedicated customer base to grow all those products.
Exactly.
Have you worked in a school cafeteria before and have something that you can add from your direct experience working with kids? The number to call today, 877-899-5866. I'd also like to invite church leaders or faith leaders who are helping families deal with access to food. What are you able to provide to families right now? Can you meet all the demands in your community? Again, the number is 877-899-5866. We're talking about access to healthy food for kids, both during the school day and after the school day for families in our communities in New Mexico. Let's go now to Wendy in Albuquerque. Wendy, what's your comment today?
Hi, I'd like to comment on this. I'm a retired teacher, APS, over 27 years, and I'm involved in an activist group, Parents and Teachers for an Educated Community. We're really concerned about the Breakfast After the Bell program. It's all packaged food. It's trucked in from out of state. It feeds into the whole corporate model of food. Some of it is branded, like there's Reese's cereal that tastes just like Reese's peanut butter cups. It's very high sugar. There's a lot of waste. And it's sending the wrong message to our children, telling them that eat this food, even though it's not good for you, it's all we can give you.
Mm. Thank you so much for calling in with that comment today, Wendy. Let's go now to Joe in Albuquerque. Joe, what do you want to add?
Hi. I have two things. Just firstly, a little nitpick. At the outset of the show, you guys mentioned that I think the school lunch program was compared to the space program. And if we're going to compare it to any sort of wasteful spending, I think there's probably more egregious forms of waste that we could point to. I mean, we just dropped tens of millions of dollars of Tomahawk missiles, arguably ineffectively, on Syria. We have tax loopholes for corporations and the very wealthy, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the larger issue, the larger statement I'd like to make is that I think we're all sort of, appalled by capitalism, really fundamentally here. We don't really have much of a sense of the common good anymore in this country, and we're a very capitalistic society. So, you know, the previous commenter mentioned the corporate model of food delivery, the Coke machines in schools and stuff, and our answer to everything seems to be to privatize things. And I guess I'm just thinking that, you know, maybe we could fund some of these more common good type things. I mean, other countries look at our healthcare model. They see the same appalling thing as they see when they see kids having to be shamed for having a few dollars of debt to get a meal. So anyway, I wondered if any of your panel could comment on, you know, the social aspect of this, about our economy being highly capitalistic and profit-driven. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. I think, Travis, you made a comment about if we have this space program, we can afford this, right? Is that what you were trying to say?
I mean, yeah, and just to kind of resonate with the caller, I agree. I'd rather, much rather, the millions of dollars spent on those missiles and bombs that were just recently dropped go to feed our kids healthier, more nutritious food. But I think both the callers bring up a great point. We need to step out of this capitalistic corporate model and go back to community, back to local agriculture. And if we look at New Mexico historically, we've been feeding ourselves healthy, nutritious food for hundreds and thousands of years with our First Nations, indigenous people here, our Chicano communities. This isn't anything new. And Wendy, I'm going to try to look up your parent activist group. We're part of the Families United for Education group, too, trying to advocate for educational reform. And I would love for our kids to go and eat a bowl of beans and chile for breakfast, or a bowl of pozole. Or my dream is you can show up and get a cup of atole grown, you know, blue corn grown in Atrisco in the South Valley. I mean, I feel like we have the creativity and the cultural foods that can help heal this. We just need access, and we need to get that in there. And also choice. I want to resonate with what Josh said about choice. I mean, when we're just force feeding our kids one option, that's everybody's different. Everybody has a different diet. They have different taste buds. And one of the youth that was reflecting on the school meal system was talking about a continental breakfast, that concept of where you show up. And what if we had a plethora of healthy options where a child could get a hard-boiled egg and a piece of toast, or one child, since they like yogurt and some fruit, or one person likes a hot bowl of oatmeal, or, you know, I mean, it happens at hotels, it happens at conferences. Why can't we give that to our kids and give them that choice? Equally could be said about a locally sourced salad or veggie bar, yeah, you know, where the child has the choice and they're not just force-fed a bag of, you know, carrots in a bag or an unripened pear, which is a lot of the, you know, fruit and veggie options that we see in the school meals. And they could pick from locally grown fresh carrots and cucumbers and melons and all these great things that we can grow.
Jenny, we have mentioned this hour that, you know, some of those packaged foods that Wendy was talking about are so much cheaper. There's a real challenge there. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So let me talk about breakfast after the bell and even school lunch and the quality of the meals. The question with breakfast after the bell is, if this is what we have and this is what we have, would we want to give them nothing or something? You know, USDA approved balanced meals. One of the things people don't know is that it is very different than what is sold in the stores. So you might have a Pop-Tart and it has significantly less sugar because of the USDA meal requirements than it does the one on the shelf at the grocery store. But that said, there have been longitudinal studies about children who eat at school versus who bring their meals, and they have the ones who eat at school have significantly better health outcomes. The breakfast after the bell is an incredibly important tool, and I think it is, I don't know what the right word for it is, but it is frustrating to hear when these children really have nothing at school and they're getting this hot meal or they're getting something and they can start their day, and they started their day with a little TLC. Organic is a luxury for these children. Like, let's just get them some food. Now, that said, almost all of this is negotiated in D.C. It is all lobbied. So the milk requirements are the dairy industry. And so the real place to change the quality of food is going to be in D.C. And I really encourage people to start saying, you know, our children deserve better food than this. Our children deserve a different meal pattern than this. You know, all these requirements about, like, not being able to do congregate feeding, those are all USDA requirements, and so those need to change in D.C.
I want to hear from folks who think they may call their members of Congress to talk about this issue. They care so much about it. The number is 877-899-5866. You can join us today to talk about what you think about access to fresh, healthy food. Do you think that that's something we should emphasize more in New Mexico? Do you think we have the resources to do that right now? Do you have a creative idea for addressing hunger and access to healthy, fresh food that you'd like to share? 877-899-5866. Josh, MoGrow does focus on not just food, but healthy, fresh food. Why is that important for you guys to prioritize that for the communities you serve?
Well, for the very reasons Travisa is talking about. Many of our families do come from a rich cultural tradition of eating things like atole and beans and chili. And we want them to have those choices, and we want their kids to learn those traditions. And bringing that into schools would be immensely powerful. But beyond that, a caller before mentioned La Cosecha being involved with the health clinic in the valley, Casa de Salud. And MoGrow actually does very similar work with the health clinic in Santa Fe called La Familia. And, you know, these clinics, you know, have reached out to us, and we've partnered with them to work with the doctors to bring healthy foods to these families, because, you know, sometimes a place like MoGrow or perhaps a cafeteria with healthier food is the one place that a family can rely on to get their healthy meal for the day.
Yeah, all these things are so connected. I want to bring in Alexandria Lyons, an intern with Project Feed the Hood in Albuquerque's International District. Alexandria, you work with families and kids on gardening and go into the schools as well. What's the value in kids being involved in that process and growing their own food and trying things out?
Well, I think when kids go ahead and they learn how to grow food, they start to have a connection not only with the land, but with food. And so when they grow up, they're going to go ahead and they're going to teach their children that. But like as Travis and like, you know, all of our speakers have said, New Mexico has a rich agricultural history. Like our agricultural system predates like many in the U.S. And it's just sad to see that our children and our families don't have their own like self-determination to decide what they want to grow. And so I think that being in the schools is really awesome because it encourages kids to tell their families and their parents like that they want to go ahead and they want to have a garden, and that's huge.
And if you know, families are so busy, parents are sometimes working two or three jobs. If the kids can jump in there and do some work, do you think that would make it more of a realistic possibility for families?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think so.
Are there differences in how you work with kids of different ages, how you approach the topic?
There are. So I work with a couple different ages. I work with kindergarten through fifth grade, and with Project Feed the Hood, we also work with high schoolers. So, you know, it could be anything teaching kids about pollinators to teaching kids about different types of food. We talk about the three sisters, so the beans, the squash, the corn, to any, like, other, like, advanced kind of topics of, like, food sovereignty for, like, the high schools. So it does differ.
Tell us what food sovereignty is, how you teach that to students.
So food sovereignty, so it kind of goes back to this idea that you have control over the means of production. You have control over the means of your food and your food system. And then you can choose what you want to grow, what you want to put into your body.
Yeah. I bet it can feel overwhelming for folks, though, when there's so few options. And we've talked about all these structural problems with transportation, and maybe the only store in your neighborhood is Walmart. Do youth pick up on that and see that and want to talk about all the complicated things that are going around them?
Yes, definitely. There's one activity we do. It's called Map Your Meal. And we basically teach young children to kind of map like one ingredient from their plate. So that could be like, you know, enchiladas, you know, where do onions come from? And, you know, we help them kind of go through this process of learning where does that onion come from? And then they learn these kind of bigger pictures that, you know, sometimes we're getting garlic from China or like these crazy things. And like even the students, they realize, you know, they could go to their backyard and they can grow it way faster for a lot cheaper, and it just doesn't make sense. And so, you know,
I think adults could even do that and get something out
exactly.
of thinking about that. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Our topic today is access to fresh, healthy foods in New Mexico, particularly for children and families. If you have something you want to add, the number is 877-899-5866. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from The Outpost presenting its annual gala fundraiser with rock soul vocalist Lisa Fisher and Grand Baton on Friday, May 26th at the Albuquerque Museum. Gala and concert only tickets available. Outpostspace.org.
Are you no longer driving? Consider donating your car to KUNM. Or do you have a relative who's no longer driving? Even if they live in another state, our vehicle donation program can arrange to pick up their car, sell it, and give the proceeds to KUNM. Listeners donating cars and trucks and other unwanted vehicles are a significant source of funds for KUNM. See if your vehicle qualifies. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
As we continue our Earth Week, we explore just how poetic our planet can get. On the next Native America Calling, we turn to Native poets to give us their celebration of words that will help us get closer to the beauty of our Mother Earth. From the rivers to the stars, there's plenty to celebrate with words and poetry. We hope you'll make plans to join us.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
All right, we have an email comment from Tony. He says he's thankful for all the work that food justice activists and local farmers have done on this issue of hunger. His daughter saw her friend pulled out of the lunch line when she was in school and spoke before the APS board about it. He says tireless work has made a difference. Also an email comment from Francesca. She says she's glad for the progress and wants to see the focus continue on transitioning from less healthy mass-produced options to local and more healthy options. You can still send in your comments as hour. It's call-in show at KUNM.org. Let's go now to Melissa in Albuquerque. Melissa, you have a story to share with us. Melissa, are you there? All right, we'll try to get Melissa back. Let's go now to Brian in Albuquerque. Brian, what's the comment you want to make this hour?
Great. in the APS school system. And one of the things that I noticed when they were in kindergarten 2 years ago is the amount of waste that the kids are perpetrating, you know, in the lunches and even in the breakfasts. They'll run through the line with their fellow classmates. They'll gather all the foodstuffs that are there available, healthy or not, usually all, probably because they think that abundance is greater than any lack. And what I notice is that the kids will have a few bites of any of the items that they choose from the buffet, and then waste the rest. The kids will take a container of milk or a container of juice, not open it, put it on their tray, and just throw it in the trash. I'm amazed at the amount of waste going on in the system, and I wonder whether the APS administration can intervene to do anything about this. I understand that it's kids' behavior, it's kids' attitudes. I think that your panel probably should address waste going on and the attitudes of the kids themselves, not so much the parents or the teachers or the cafeteria workers. But I think it's a good idea to address the amount of waste if anyone other than we parents have observed this.
All right. Thanks for that comment, Brian. Food waste is a really, really interesting topic. And I know there are some communities around the country that are actually looking for some creative solutions, like picking up those foods that aren't used or using it in different ways. Travis, do you want to make a comment on food waste?
Sure. Thank you for that comment. I think it happens with students a lot, but let's be real. I mean, it's happening in our society. We're wasting food at an incredible rate. Millions and millions of pounds of food are thrown out every day. From restaurants, from grocery stores, foods that could be eaten or foods that could be given to animals and raise animals for production. But just a shout out, Van Buren Middle School, the principal, Jerry Heilman, has taken the initiative to try to do a school-wide compost program. And so we are beginning to collect all that food waste that the caller was talking about and bringing it out to the compost area where we can then create healthy, nutritious soil to grow healthy, nutritious food for our students and families. And it's been an interesting process. Let's talk about the reality of the school lunchtime that kids are given. They have 30 minutes. It's a long line of hundreds of kids. By the time the last kid gets into the cafeteria to receive their food, we've clocked it. They have about 8 minutes to eat their food, relax, and have. I think that is shameful in itself. Like, our kids deserve more break time. Middle schoolers aren't getting recess, you know, so this is like the only 30-minute break they have from an intense day of learning and working. And so that being said, when everybody lines up to the trash, it's almost like they're asleep. It's mindless, that they just mindlessly throw stuff out, right? And almost expect the custodial workers to deal with their waste. So they show up with a tray full of a mess. And so what we're trying to do is education, right? And despierta, like wake up and have the kids care about the waste and do it in a way where we're composting, we're recycling, and really the least amount of stuff that they're going to be disposing of is trash, right? Most of it can be recycled and composted, but it's that process of caring about it that's going to affect the student for a lifetime. So if we can get them to care about it while they're lined up in the school lunch line to dispose of their waste in a, you know, humane, sustainable manner, that's going to bleed into their school and being more mindful in school and in life and at home and in the community. So,
yeah. Jenny and Josh, did you guys want to make a quick comment on that as well?
I was just going to say, one of the things that schools can do is a share table. So when children have taken something that they don't want, they can put it on a table and any kid can have it once it's been served.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that this is a great opportunity for learning here. The wonderful thing about being able to observe our kids in these kind of environments where they're more in control, we're not supervising what they do with this food, is that we can think of them as a mirror. All they're doing is reflecting back to us our values in society. So if no one has taught them that it's not okay to throw away food, or that food itself doesn't have some kind of inherent value, then they're not gonna exhibit any kind of behavior that we would like them to exhibit. And secondarily, as far as school recesses and kids having time to get some energy out, I mean, they get in this room and they have very little time because they've been waiting in line. And then they want to talk to their friends and they want to move their bodies. And the last thing on their mind is going to be what they did with their milk. Unfortunately, it's sad to see. And it saddens me too, like our caller, to see food has value and to see it going to waste. But let's get real and let's figure out what we can do to bring our kids into the fold with this.
Thanks, Josh. Let's go now to Dory in Albuquerque. Dory, welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show.
Thank you. I'm a public school teacher, and I'm very concerned. And I know our school has been very proactive, very vocal about the high sugar content. Over 73 grams of sugar in a free and reduced breakfast, and that's day in and day out. Most of the foods, and it's the vast majority of foods, are packaged in plastic. It's not like you're receiving a bowl of something warm and creamy. There are no options. In fact, many teachers have tried to reserve some of the packaged raisins or fruits and milks to save for children later in the day if they are hungry, because most of our students in Albuquerque Public Schools are receiving free and reduced lunch. And all that information is available to parents, to community members, in terms of what percentage. And it's the vast majority. They're Title I schools. So many of our kids are coming to school hungry. Many of our kids, that both parents are working 1, 2, 3 jobs. So this is a huge issue, not just in terms of waste. Imagine being a kid who can't stomach milk. I mean, we have many children, Native, all kinds of kids who are dealing with diabetes. Our issues are huge. And so if there's not a simple fix, and we need to understand that if kids are going to learn, if kids are going to be able to engage, they need more than 15 minutes. At the elementary level, kids have 15 minutes to eat at lunch. They have 15 minutes for recess. So it's some of the callers are not reflecting what is actually in practice. And it's going to get tighter and more difficult. And our people that are serving food, they are bound to follow certain mandates, whether it's from the district or the state. And we're not allowed to hold back those foods that aren't being eaten to provide for kids. We've set up a food pantry, and we've had our hands slapped saying that we're not allowed to do that. Some of that is important because if you store milk and it becomes warm, that can become a health risk too. So the issues are big. I'm really hoping that people who care about food and children and education, because it does affect us all, some point in line.
It does. Dory, thank you so much. Dory, you did such an excellent job of bringing together that this is a community issue. This is broader than just individual families or individual schools. Thank you for that perspective as a teacher. I want to get in one more caller because we're going to talk a little bit right here at the end about farming. Kyle, what do you want to add to our conversation?
Well, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple things, actually. I want to start by saying that if we want to continue this conversation, I'm part of a group that's organizing the March Against Monsanto and the Bees and Seeds Festival coming up on May 20th. You can find us on Facebook there. So there's that. But my question is, maybe specifically for Travis, because I know he's big in the farming world, where we can go, where local farmers can go, what we can do to get involved and help starting to get fresh local food into schools, what sort of infrastructure and systems do we have ready right now?
Travis, comment you want to make on that?
Sure. Thank you so much for that. I want to shout out the farm that I farm at, Cornelio Candelaria Organics. It's in Atrisco. I farm with Lorenzo Candelaria. It's a 300-year-old family farm. I feel like farmers are the future. We have to. And we have 150-plus schools in the APS district. What if we had 150-plus farms supporting them? farm-to-school initiatives, taking students to the farm to actually see food growing is a good first step, I feel. It's just unbelievable the magic that happens when a kid pulls a carrot out of the ground for the first time and actually connects earth and healing and energy with the food that they're eating. We like to say food is medicine. And Lorenzo always says the most important crop we grow is consciousness. So we must all collectively grow that together. But I think this 1% procurement thing, if we could get 1% of our budget to buy locally grown, fruits and vegetables would be a good first step. And then it's looking at school gardens as the beacon of light for our community, that we could turn our schools into food hubs. We could grow thousands of pounds of food directly at our schools and have it integrated into the curriculum, into family engagement, into supporting refugee families and youth and populations like that. So I feel like the school garden, it needs to evolve into an integral element of education, that the school garden is an educational tool that can carry us into the future to provide health and well-being for our youth and for our families.
Josh, you want to add something about that? We've talked about you connecting with health providers, also with farmers. Where do we go from here?
Well, I do want to add that just to the caller's question, MoGrow also, we make a big effort to buy from farmers, and that's increasing as our time progresses. And so please, if you are a farmer, a local farmer in the Albuquerque or anywhere in New Mexico, reach out to us. Our website is just mogrow.net, and we're looking to work with farmers and to be a supportive form of support for each other.
Jenny, final comment you want to make this hour?
Sure. I think it's important that we all think about this idea of dignity, whether it's making sure families are able to get access to healthy food or making sure when they show up at school they don't feel shamed. One of the things I did want to mention is that Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham is actually going to introduce our lunch shaming bill on a federal level and just make sure that there are a couple of basic, bottom line things that we as a society agree that we are not going to do to children. So that should be exciting to watch.
And Alexandria from Project Feed the Hood, you're going to be working more with kids. What do you see ahead? Are you hopeful for where things are headed?
Definitely. As Tavis mentioned, we need to pay attention to our school gardens. A lot of my educators, especially at Kirtland Elementary, they're so excited to get into the garden and to let their students go ahead and put their hands in the dirt. And I think that this is a model that a lot of educators are clinging onto, and I see it continuing, especially in APS.
And have you seen, Travis mentioned that kid pulling a carrot out of the ground for the first time. Do you see that too in kids having that first time experience?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Just putting the seed in the ground.
Yeah. What's that like?
It is absolutely amazing, because then they see the actual process it takes to grow any sort of produce, and that's just priceless.
Empowers them. Well, thank you all today. I think we learned an incredible amount about some of the resources that are in the community and things that are happening, such as with the lunch shaming bill. We're going to put links on our website, kunm.org, to everything that was mentioned today if folks want to read up more on this. That's all the time we have, but the conversation doesn't have to end here. Find KUNM News on Twitter or go to the KUNM call-in show page at kunm.org and share your comments about access to healthy food for children and families in New Mexico. We're particularly interested in hearing about other programs that we didn't cover today, so we can follow up on that in the future. I'm Sarah Gustavus. I'm also the producer of New Mexico in Focus on New Mexico PBS. Marino Spencer was the engineer today, and Sarah Trujillo screened your calls. Anna Landy tweeted the show today, and Elaine Baumgartel is the executive producer. Join us again at the same time next week. We'll be talking with students about how the University of New Mexico can do a better job helping students who've been sexually assaulted. Leave a voicemail message in advance of the show at 505-398-4616, or you can call in live during the show next Thursday morning at 8, right here on 89.9 KUNM.